This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Yo, yo, hour number 2. What up, Tinky and Tierney? Masters Friday. What's going on? Hopefully a lot. Hopefully a lot. We got a lot going on here for sure. Stick around. Some good quarterback talk in the first hour. Some great golf talk in the first hour. And a little baseball sticky issue. We'll get to that here in a moment. I'm coming from our studio. It's the Rocket Mortgage Studio. Want to see your loan options, adjust payments, and closing costs online in real time? Rocket can. So, Tiki and Tierney here on this Friday. On Twitter at Tiki and Tierney. Same deal on Instagram, youtube.com/Tiki and Tierney. All right, coming up next. So a couple of the old heads got together, potted it up, hopped on a cast, and we're chopping it up. And what emerged was some incredible content, fascinating stuff from Kevin Durant and Draymond Green, who talked about everything in a wide-ranging, I think it was well over an hour or so. I caught a bunch of clips. I think it was over an hour. We're going to circle to the meat of their comments. Most specifically, calling young players soft, which is what Draymond did. We'll get to that coming up.
Isn't that what all old heads do? Oh, they're soft.
Yeah, no, I know. I hear you. I don't know. I know what you mean. I feel like every generation kind of looks a little cross-eyed at that. Yeah, they don't do it the way we used to do it. Well, maybe they do it better in some instances.
Exactly.
I get it. I know how it works. But I don't feel like when I was growing up, like guys like Oscar Robertson, I'm thinking of guys from like the 60s and even dudes from the 70s, they weren't looking at guys in the 80s saying, man, these guys play a soft brand of ball. Unless I'm misremembering.
Yeah.
But, I mean, and that's just basketball. All the bean brawls I saw in the 80s, bench clearing fights.
Yeah, in fact, they got tougher in the 80s.
In a lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean, there was brawls and, like, hard fouls that sometimes would get called.
Yeah, one that cost my Knicks a championship against the Miami Heat, but we're not going to get into that. I don't want to raise the blood pressure. Let's raise awareness on sticky substances here. So, Trevor Bauer, didn't take him long to get involved in something hot. Now, he put out a lengthy tweet, which is pretty interesting. Before I read Trevor's tweet, let me give you a little something here. We all know baseball's cracking down. Talk about spin rate. You and I touched on this yesterday. Mm-hmm. The tackified substance, it's just common sense. The stickier it is, the quicker you can snap it. The more torque you get, the more revolutions you get, blah, blah, blah. Better break and harder to hit. So back in late March, Teak, all right, baseball issued a memo to all 30 teams regarding the doctoring of baseballs with substances by pitchers for this season.
Yep.
They just really wanted to crack down. And here we are a week into the season. We've got the first report of a pitcher's baseballs being investigated by the league. They took a bunch of Trevor Bauer's pitches from Wednesday's game against the Oakland A's. That's the game that won me the Habiki, by the way.
It is.
Nothing sticky about this, that's for sure. That is for sure.
Yeah, well, so now the game is in question, though.
Yeah, well, not the. I don't know that the game is in question. Maybe.
I'm just kidding.
Exactly. Oh, pertaining to the bet? No, yeah. That's right. No, the game is not in question. And as we know, they can't go back and change it.
No.
I mean, I guess you could always protest it, but whatever. So we are in an interesting stage now. The preliminary stage, for sure, of this new, you know, microscope that has been cast on the game.
Mm-hmm.
And Trevor Bauer, anytime he's involved in anything, he's obviously going to get the last word. And you know, we follow him on Twitter. He follows us back. Here's what he wrote. He wrote last night, "Always fun reading desperate and misleading clickbait headlines from national gossip bloggers. To translate fake journalists speak for you, it's unclear whether," and he put quotes around that, "equals, I can't be bothered to look into this because it doesn't fit my narrative. Wonder where the articles about balls from every other pitcher being taken out of play in literally every other game this season are. Also, laughing at baseball, who already has sources talking to gossip bloggers about a supposedly confidential process a week into the season. Thumbs up. Keep killing it. So, I mean, listen, if I'm him, I'm ticked off as well if I'm being dragged into this. And, you know, he went in to talk about some other things, and he raises some pretty interesting points because the crackdown is on any substance that the pitcher might possess, right?
Yes.
But what if the third baseman has a little something in his mitt, unknowing to the pitcher, which seems odd, obviously, unless the third baseman's trying to get a better grip on the ball across the diamond. But I guess that's somewhat
possible.
Which he could. Which he could.
It's the same principle. It's cold, right? You need
true.
Better grip. You want to, you know, heave it.
That's true.
You need better grip.
Yep. Bauer also talked about, and this makes sense, what happens if you run a ball in on somebody's hands where the pine tar is legal, can't go past a certain threshold on the bat. Obviously, you don't want it on the meat of the bat, but from the handle right below the meat or the barrel, the heart of the barrel, you can have it. What if somebody gets jammed and there's a little residue there that finds its way on the ball and they take a ball out of play and they think it's from Trevor Bauer, but it's actually from pine tar from somebody's bat?
Yeah.
Also plausible.
Also, the catcher. The catcher can have pine tar or whatever substance in his glove or on his pad.
He could.
Inside of his hand. You know, you never know, right? And so he actually makes a ton of sense because I think he's trying to expose the hypocrisy of what the Major League Baseball is doing if they are investigating Trevor Bauer. And I don't know if they've said, like, we are investigating Trevor Bauer. They're talking about the balls themselves.
Well, they're investigating the balls that Trevor Bauer threw.
Directly or indirectly, they are
somewhat investigating Trevor Bauer.
True, but they kind of in turn are investigating everybody on the Dodgers.
I don't know. Trevor Bauer said that about the third baseman, the catcher, the batter.
But he's right.
Major League Baseball didn't say that.
But here's my point. Why would Major League Baseball not think about that also?
Because there's nobody smart that runs baseball. That's
I'm
why.
Serious. Think about it.
Come on.
Right? If you're
going
to. Like, when it came out before the season started that they were, you know, we're now cracking down on sticky substances, it was kind of like, all right, okay, I get it. I understand why that because of the spin rate and everything else that you mentioned, BT. But it was so specific to the pitcher. But Trevor Bauer, who is always thinking above the fray, says something that is like, plainly obvious that the pitcher might have some sticky substance, but any of the other guys could have a sticky substance as well. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And in particular, the catcher who also touches the ball on most every play, at least if it gets through.
Yeah,
and you know they don't change balls every pitch, and so he catches one, you know, rubs it in his glove, throws it back to the pitcher. He's got a little sticky stuff on the inside of his glove. Now all of a sudden, Trevor Bauer, whoever's pitching, has got a little tackification, and he had nothing to do with it, even though he probably, you know, condones it. It had nothing to do with it. So I think Trevor is smart in how he's attacking Major League Baseball here, especially after this story got leaked out that he was under investigation in a sense.
Listen, I don't know how this is even remotely enforceable. I just know when I played, which is when dinosaurs roamed the earth here at this point, but I had a black first baseman's mitt, and I had no need to put anything tackified on my glove, right?
Mm-hmm.
I had it on my bat. I had it past the threshold. I don't really think they even really enforced that in the NCAA, but, you know, I had it up probably further than I should have. It was all over my barrel, all over my handle for sure. Had it on my helmet a little bit. You know, I just bought a new glove. Well, Santa brought Daddy a new glove last year as well. And it's a Rawlings middle infielder's glove, which is sweet. And it's the same color as pine tar. What would stop me? You know, I mean, me or anybody who has that glove, if I'm pitching, I mean, you throw a little something on the inner portion, you get the ball back from the catcher. It's right there.
Yeah.
I don't know how you can possibly enforce this. So this is a disservice to baseball because now they create
a controversy.
Uber awareness, right?
Yes.
Without a direct path to correct it, which is completely irresponsible.
It is.
If you think about it.
It is, unless you're going to ban any sticky substance everywhere for everybody. And then that kind of makes it a little bit dangerous, you know, for some of these guys. Because these bats, how many times have we seen these things fly out of people's hands and into the stands and things of that nature, or even into the field of play? Like, you kind of need some tackification. That's why guys wear batting gloves, but even they don't help all the time. And so, Major League Baseball isn't thinking the right way about how to correct what they think cheating is going on. You know what I mean? There's a way to that players over generations have been getting away with putting substances on balls, mm-hmm. to give themselves an advantage. Major League Baseball knows it. Every team knows it. Hell, the fans know it. I'm not even sure if we care that much, to be honest with you. But Major League Baseball is coming down hard on a guy like Trevor Bauer simply because they think it's the right thing to do, when in actuality, it might not be.
I don't know what the end game is here. I don't know if they'll ever come up with anything that satisfies, you know, those who believe that the pitchers are really beginning to tilt the playing field to a point that something needs to be. I don't know what they can do.
But BT, how about, like, pitchers are just getting better? You know what I mean? Like, why does it have to be stagnant that a guy who pitched in the 80s or 90s, you know, doesn't have the spin rate that guys are pitching in the 2010s or now the 2020s. Like, mm-hmm. what's abnormal about that? Right.
Well,
the athlete advances, like technology and training advances. Maybe the remember those squeezy things, those hand things you used to use to strengthen your wrists.
Oh yeah, the Rocky things.
Yeah. Maybe they use those more. I mean, who knows?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it could be some tackified substance, but it's probably not, because they used tackified substances in the 60s and 70s.
They did.
They were blatant about it, right?
Yeah.
And it didn't, you know, have these massive spin rate adjustments happening every single
year. There also weren't HD cameras from every angle, cell phones. I mean, guys could put – they were so cavalier, they would have that little, you know, that little dab of pine tar. And then when they would touch the rosin, which is obviously powder-like, you get the powder, which is white, whitish or creamish. And then you get it on a dark, you've got this thing that really resonates off the top of the cap, but nobody cared back then because there wasn't every angle that was illuminating
it. Good point.
You know, listen, are guys better today? There's no doubt, but I think, you know, when it comes to throwing a baseball, unlike golf, like unlike Bryson DeChambeau, who certainly is testing the limits of physics and certainly strength. There's no question. But he also has better equipment than Jack and Gary Player and all those guys had.
Yep.
So that you can partially attribute some of the golf distance from, number one, an uber awareness of the numbers that we talked about yesterday, ball speed, etc., but also just better driver heads, better better everything, right? So you're hitting the ball with something better, it's going to go better. But nothing's really changed. Everybody still has arms. The rubber or the mound after 1968, which was the year of the pitcher, and when they dropped it, when they lowered the mound to kind of level the field, because it was, I think the ERA was like it was ridiculous. Nobody was hitting, and it wasn't good for the game. And the 68 World Series was just, you know, between Gibson for the Cardinals and a few of the Tigers. I mean, every game seemingly was like 2-1, 2-0. It was ridiculous. So they changed it, right? So from 1969 forward. Well, 68, but 69 season forward, I don't know what, outside of weight training, I don't know what has changed, but I do know that when I watch a game, every single pitcher coming out of the bullpen, I mean, every staff has seven guys throwing 97 miles
an
hour.
About it.
And not only that, their secondary stuff is wicked, man.
That's right.
Like, it almost breaks unnaturally. Like, it dives with a wiffle ball manner, which lends me to believe that
guys are getting better.
Guys are getting better at cheating.
Well, I mean, I don't know, BT. I mean, because think about how like, it's hard to throw 100 miles an hour. It's hard to do it. There was a while where there was only, you know, a handful of guys that were clipping 100, and they were physically.
Dwight Gooden, like, didn't even throw 100 miles.
Exactly.
An hour.
But think of, like, Randy Johnson. Remember when Randy Johnson first, and he was like consistently hitting 100.
Sure.
You could explain it because he was 6'8" or whatever the heck he was.
I think 6'10".
I think Randy, you're right. 6'10". I think you might be right. He was 6'10". So, like, the leverage of coming from where he came from.
Yep.
The whip nature of his arm, and basically is getting released, I don't know, 5 inches closer than everybody else's.
It definitely is.
Right? You could explain it. nowadays, you see some of these pictures, like the kid Merriweather, who's the closer for...
Oh, for Toronto.
For Toronto.
He's nasty.
But he's not 6'6". You know what I mean? He's 6'1", maybe? Maybe 6'2"? Yeah. He threw 100, at least four straight times against the Yankees. I think it was Judge. No, maybe it was Stanton. He just was ripping them off, like 100, 100, 100. And eventually got them on some high heat. But you just can't catch up to it, right? That's just... But it feels natural to him. You know what I mean? It's not like he's like working to get to 100. So I have to conclude that the athlete has just gotten better. And so when you see these new pitches and these, you know, these breaking balls that just, I mean, they don't even curve. Like they're throwing curves, but they're not curving. They're just like dropping. Right. I think it's a testament to their work ethic of these guys and the innovation and arm motions and things of that nature. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean, and I'm not saying that I completely disagree, because I think that we've learned a lot about the structure of the arm, number mm-hmm. one. A lot of these guys have already had Tommy John surgery, that's so their great. Ligaments were already strengthened.
Yep.
You know, the labrum, you start working on that earlier, you stretch things out, long toss, awareness. I mean, that all leads to an improved product for sure. And there were some guys back in the day when we were growing up that broke off some nasty stuff, like Fernando threw a screwball, yeah. Fernando Valenzuela. There were a couple of guys who threw screwballs. That was a really unnatural. I always messed around the street and it always hurt. It's really hard to throw a screwball. And that looked almost like an unnatural break. But now I feel like every game that I watch, and I've got baseball on every night, you know, it's almost like these balls are taking right turns. Like they're like they're not natural. So to me, I can't attribute that just to, you know, the pure evolution of the human body or awareness of training methods. Partially attributable, yes. Mm-hmm. But I really do believe that there's something that goes into the spin rate. There's just no doubt. And by the way, the spin rate, everybody thinks the spin rate just affects the curveball. The spin rate absolutely impacts the fastball, too.
Yeah.
Because the more revolutions you get, the more it cuts through the air. The more it cuts through the air, pure physics without velocity, the quicker it's getting to the catcher's mitt. So there's all these things that are intertwined that after a while get boring talking about. I got it. But in summation, baseball's a bunch of clowns. Because as much as I love the game, they are on a fruitless chase. Unless you start suspending these guys or are able to...
But you got to prove it.
Well, that's what I was going to say. And are able to definitively determine the origin of the tackified substance, which means good luck finding that.
Yeah.
You're really just... You're heightening awareness. You're heightening sensitivity. You're ratcheting up emotions. You just ticked off one of the best pitchers in the game. Maybe unnecessarily, by the way. Maybe didn't even do anything wrong. Mm-hmm. And now fans are sitting there. And this is the worst... And then we'll get the break. This is the worst thing about for the fans. Now they're sitting there saying... Man, last couple of years, Trevor Bauer,
yeah. Man,
I know he was kind of, he was good when he first came up, but now he's all world. Why is he all world?
Yeah.
Well, how do you not deduce that maybe it's something that is enhanced?
Yeah, now because he won the Cy Young last year, everybody thinks, oh, maybe he didn't really earn it.
Yeah, which is unfair, but also, I mean, it could partly be true. Because in real time,
well, now you're thinking about it.
You never know.
Now you're thinking about it, which is unfair. For Trevor Bauer, right? Whether they're right or wrong about what he did, it's unfair to Trevor.
Well,
Bauer.
It's unfair if you lay, you know, claim at his doorstep. If you internally surmise, that's fine.
Yeah.
But when you go on these reckless chases, as some people do, if I'm Trevor Bauer, I'm pissed off too.
Me too.
I get it, man. All right, little beef back in the day between KD and Draymond. Boy, I wish I could have those guys mic'd up in the locker room, just on the court, their interactions in practice. Must have been awesome. Well, we did have something mic'd up. It's a podcast, and they were kind of throwing some smoke, and they were throwing some smoke and some shade at the young generation. One of them actually called these kids soft. We'll play it, and we'll talk about it next. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. All right, Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network. Back, the Masters, the backdrop for the weekend. But we're going to get into some interesting conversation that was had with Draymond and KD. We'll do that here, coming up next segment. So, the Mets won pretty controversially yesterday. The umps today, you know, I guess you could extend it to the referees as well. Any official, NHL, anybody who basically gets called to you know, make a determination if there's somebody safe or out or inbounds, out of bounds, whatever. Mm-hmm. Are we at the point where they are just in an impossible position to ever be judged fairly and looked upon favorably based on the advanced technology these days? So we'll get to that conversation. But the way the Mets won yesterday was ridiculous. They should give half a win back for the way they won. Conforto sticking his elbow into the strike, so it's a strike.
Yes,
right over the middle of the plate.
But isn't that on the ref?
It should have been, and it's not reviewable, which is another mess with baseball, which we'll get to coming up next segment. So Durant and Draymond Green were on, I guess this is Kevin Durant's podcast. It's called the ETCs, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's the et cetera's or the ETCs, whatever it is, but
yeah.
I have ETC in front of me, so I guess that's what the podcast is called. And they were chatting, and they hit a multitude of items, and they went into the direction of, you know, how tough the modern player is. And, well, somebody dropped the S word. Check this out.
You got to let know you there, man. That's what I don't appreciate with a lot of young guys in the league today. Like, they come in, they entitled. And I don't like that.
I see them come in, and they friendly, too. It's like they were coming on the court. What's up, big homie? Like, how you doing? Like, that's cool. We can say that for after the game. But I'm used to young players coming into the league with, like, basically I'm walking into the ghetto and I'm the newest dude on the block. Like, it don't feel that way no more. You feel that in the league too?
Absolutely. They nothing like that. They soft as hell. Man, I found myself this year trying to talk to some of these young dudes that won't talk. And they like trying to be a friend.
Yeah.
But that's what these young dudes do nowadays, man. I don't understand it. Hey, brothers and all this on social media, shout out this dude, all of that. You know, and so they're even more tied together than we are. But they're losing the sense of competitiveness. Like you said, like, they don't have that mentality no more. You know what I'm saying? They don't have, I'm doing this for the love of the game mentality. A lot of these little dudes are doing it for a good Instagram account. And so I think what drove us and what's driving them is two different things, and it's showing in their competitive level.
Okay, a lot of stuff to unpack there. First of all, part of the reason, and I largely agree with what a lot of both of those guys just said, but I think the familiarity, like when Kevin Durant went to midcourt when he was drafted as a rookie, playing for Seattle still at that point, and he's going to midcourt to play, I don't know, the Bad Boy Pistons. You got Ben Wallace and Chauncey and those cats, right? He doesn't have any sense of really who they are because he hasn't seen their public persona play out on Instagram.
Yeah.
The way these young players are raised from, you know, they've been following Kevin Durant on social media and Draymond on social media and Steph on social media and LeBron and all these guys since they were 9, 10, 11 years old. So even though they don't know them, there's a familiarity which probably gives them inwardly a license to be like, what's up, man? How you doing, brother? Because they think they know them.
Look, the world's gotten small, and it used to be, especially in sports, that you had to be one of the you had to be a peer before you were one of the guys. You know what I mean? You had to have done it and earned some respect and all those type of things before you felt like you knew someone, even though you don't know them per se, if that makes sense, right?
Totally.
Even though you've heard about them, you've studied them because they've been an opponent, you almost feel like you know them. And I think what Kevin Durant and Draymond Green are saying is that these kids think that they have that, even though they're just kids, really. And some of them are actually kids because they're 19, you know, 20 years old. And you know, they were 15 or, you know, or 5 years old when these guys were in the NBA themselves. So it's I understand why it's weird and odd to them. But let's be real about this. This is how the generation has evolved. It's how it's changed. Right. These kids grew up and social media existed. Right. They were born into social media. Mm-hmm. Right. Their moms and dads were probably posting photos of them on Facebook the moment they were born. Right. Just like we are.
Yeah, we do.
And so it's of course it's part of their existence. Of course they feel like the world is smaller. And if somebody lives on the other side of the country or hell on the other side of the world, they know them in a sense because they've experienced it. Just like, you know, you know a character on your favorite TV show that you watch for 8 straight seasons. You know what I mean? So it feels like Draymond and KD are ignoring the realities of the world right now while they're trying to chastise these players because they want them all to be hard and gangster, which is idiotic. It's just that's just not how all these kids grow up.
But should we agree with the point that it has softened these kids up, which has adversely affected the product?
I don't think that's – I mean, soft in what way? I mean, I don't know what they mean. Like, if they're saying this guy won't take a charge, or this guy is, you know, won't come out and get in my face and talk trash with me, and that makes him soft, then I don't know. It's just maybe he didn't grow up confrontational. You know what I mean? I mean, was I soft? I smiled every play in the NFL. Eric, I'd get a hit and I'd be like, good hit, dude. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, that made me soft? I didn't think so.
No.
I was a baller, dude. And so at the end of the day, how can you judge someone else not knowing them? They don't know them, right?
Well, they only know what they feel, what the opponent emits when they go against them.
Yes.
That's what they know. And by the way, you weren't out there on the field chumming it up with Washington when they came out of the tunnel. I mean, you may have been smiling, but
tried.
You were smiling to the fans. You were
I would try.
You would?
Yeah, man, what's up? How you doing? How the kids?
Don't ruin my point. Guys you knew. I'm not talking about guys you know from the ACC or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, I get it. I get it both ways. I mean, I don't look at Luka Doncic as a player who is soft. I look at him as an assassin. I don't think that, you know, LaMelo Ball is soft.
Yeah, but do we care if they are?
Yes. I care if they're soft.
That's the question.
Yes.
But soft in what way? Like, so
well,
this is nuanced in a sense, because if you say someone's soft and they're just like, they're weak, they don't want to go through they don't want to go to the hole,
mm-hmm.
like, that's a different kind of soft. I'm talking
Agreed.
About, like, it sounds like what they're talking about is these guys just want to be boys. They're just like, hey, man, you're KD, and I'm XYZ young player. Hey, respect, man. Can I get some back?
Mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Does that make them soft? I don't think so. I think it makes them enamored with the celebrity of some of these guys.
Well,
and
hold
Draymond
on. Let
KD
me...
are talking about, you know, these guys want clicks and they want to build their brands and things of that nature. Well, don't you, KD? And don't you, Draymond Green? Aren't you putting stuff out on social media for specific reasons, for branding purposes? Of course
mm-hmm,
you are.
Mm-hmm.
It's 2021. Everybody is.
No, I get that. I think that I think it's very hard, if not impossible, which I think is their greater point. I'll just communicate it a different way.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I'll maintain the same premise. I think it's very hard to try to want to take somebody's heart and rip it out of their, not really, but in the sporting sense,
yeah,
to snuff out their soul if you view somebody as like a hero or a guy that...
Yeah, he looks up to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I think when it's known, I feel like the threshold of competitiveness is altered a little bit, because the one who is entering the league is so outwardly enamored with the ones who have been there,
yeah,
that it's kind of hard for the one, in theory, for the one who's entering the league to then flip that switch and want to kill you. On the
yes.
court.
Yes.
That and I think there's some truth behind that.
Yeah, but I mean, don't you think that's always been the case?
I don't think so. I don't think so.
To an extent. I mean, you gotta earn it. Remember the who was it? Was it Larry Bird? Was it Dominique who said he was saying this to? Like, he's telling Dominique, I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna do this, and then I'm gonna drop a three in your face. You know what
Bird,
I mean?
Oh yeah, talking about Bird.
I think it was Bird. I think it was Dominique. I can't remember who he did that to. It was somebody.
I did
young.
It to a lot of guys, but
yeah,
I think you're talking about the epic playoff game where they had like 30 something combined points in the seventh game with the Hawks and the Celtics.
Yes,
I think
yes.
that was the game
yeah,
you're talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, I think that definitely is it. And so, I mean, Dominique probably was like, dude, this is Larry Bird, man. I know they were more contemporaries than what I think KD and Draymond are talking about. But,
yes, definitely. But, yeah, because Bird came in 79, and Dominique was class of, I want to say, 81 or 2 out of Georgia.
Something like that, yeah.
So they were basically the same age, whereas Draymond's 31,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, some, you know, like,
these kids are
Doncic
19,
is 22.
Yeah, so I'm talking about the young kids. I think he's talking about the young kids, you know what I mean?
Like, I guess. Listen, there's
the LaMellos of the world.
Maybe. There's a lot of different ways to get to your point, I think what's more appealing to people our age mm-hmm. is for there to be a little, maybe not combativeness, but resistance or less
here's the thing. I don't mind it.
I don't love it, but I
don't
come
mind
around
it because I don't notice it. You know what I mean? Like what he's talking about, what Kevin Durant and Draymond are talking about, like, I don't notice that on a Wednesday watching, you know, a Nets game or a Warriors game. I do.
Lack of fouls, yeah. Lack of hard fouls, lack of protecting the rim, lack of aggressive style. I think it manifests itself throughout a game.
Maybe.
But I think it does. The game's different.
Not enough to be significant, though.
Oh, the game's so different. You just have to accept it because it's never going back.
Yeah,
and exactly. Not changing.
Well, it's so.
And different. I'm not even pining for that.
It's so different because everybody stands around the 3-point line and just jacks up 3-pointers. That's why it's different.
Yeah, I mean, they were spewing some good stuff right there. A couple of old cats letting it be known that that it is different.
But they're not
you
even
know
old.
What?
The problem is they're not even old.
No, I'm saying old cats in the league, and yes. A lot of the young guys are saying, "These old guys, get out of the league. You'll be out of here." Like it is what it is. Just like we dismissed authority or older figures when we were younger. They're doing the same thing now. I'm sure it's a perception. It's what your birth certificate say, which is what basically, you know, positions us to think what we think because it's what we're exposed to. And not a bad thing, but I do think it's a real thing, and I thought that was pretty interesting. So props to those guys for, as they always do, you know, keeping it real and giving us some good stuff there. All right, Teak, what do we have here? Let's get the update from ACK, all right? I'll let you know what's happened at the Masters. Inbounds, out of bounds. The way the Mets won was pretty embarrassing. Should baseball basically have taken it back? That's on the menu. ACK's update now, then we hit a little inbounds, out of bounds. Here's Rich. This weekend on CBS, the big events continue as the best golfers in the world head to Augusta National in hopes of winning the coveted green jacket. It's a tradition unlike any other. It's the Masters. Coverage begins tomorrow at 3 Eastern and continues Sunday at 2 Eastern, 11 Pacific, only on CBS. Teak, I just sent you a little video.
I saw it.
Okay, so Rory Matt, because we had Brandel Chambly on last hour, talked about everything we needed to hit. He's obviously at Augusta. And he basically said he's never seen Rory look this bad. And Rory just hit one that we hit. I mean, basically, it was one of those banana balls that went out of bounds. Oh, my ugly stuff.
Yeah, it was quick, man. He came through really quick, like he was trying to force it. And maybe that's what happens when you try to chase distance with your long iron, with your driver. It kind of, because you need to replicate the same swing, right? That's why Bryson's been able to do this, because his swings are all exactly the same.
Yeah.
Whether he's driving or actually even putting. Because he's got this long extended arm, so he can have some consistency. It looks like Rory is just all over the place with his swings.
Well, listen, I learned a long time ago. I'm not going to waste anybody's time giving any advice on the golf swing, but I can tell you this. You just look at Rory, you know that when he's standing over that ball, he's kind of feeling like we usually feel. He doesn't know where it's going.
That's right.
All right, inbounds, out of bounds. You ready?
Yep, let's go.
Let's go.
Anything can happen in sports and often does. What's right? What's wrong? And who's just crazy? We decide. Inbounds and out of bounds now. Tiki and Tierney.
All right, Tiki. So earlier this week, we talked about how the Niners reportedly didn't speak to Nick Saban at Mac Jones' pro day, and that struck us to be a bit odd, obviously. Mm-hmm. However, apparently NFL coaches seeking the advice of college coaches is a little more rare than you would think. In an interview with Pat McAfee, Lane Kiffin, Ole Miss head man, explained why.
We get some calls, probably not as much as you think. I think that, again, no disrespect, I think a lot of people in the NFL that think, okay, well, we got to figure it out. We don't need, you know, opinions from college guys. And that may sound crazy to you, but that does happen. And I was there. I remember going to the Raiders and saying, all right, on every draft prospect, the position coach called the college position coach, you know, asked the intangibles, asked what they think of them, and they all looked at me like, wait, we're going to do what? We don't need their opinions.
Okay. So, inbounds, out of bounds. It's a mistake for NFL coaches not to reach out to college coaches before taking a player.
Yes, absolutely it's a mistake. Now, you might get some non-information. Basically, the position coach is going to sing the platitudes. But there could be, whether there was a truthfulness in that position coach or a glaring issue that a coach just feels compelled to point out. But you also start to build a relationship if you do this on a year-in and year-out basis, so you ultimately will get the truth. It is a mistake? No, it's not a mistake. This is out of bounds. I think they should do more of this. Lane Kiffin, in this interview with Pat McAfee, also said one of the few head coaches that actually did reach out to him for advice on players that they might potentially draft is Bill Belichick. And so Bill's been doing it a certain way for a long time, including getting advice where he can get advice.
I'm with you. Inbounds. So our nightly routine after the baths are in and the books are read and little games are watched and we do our thing. You know, it's part of daddy's job. I also got to take out the American flag. I take that in every night. Make sure every door is locked. Go downstairs. Kids go in the yard. Sometimes they don't lock it. Gloves everywhere. So daddy goes around the house, checks every door. 99. Then I put the alarm on. 99.999% of the time, every door is locked. But I go back and I check it a second time anyway. You know what? It can't hurt is my point. I mean, you call a college coach, it can't hurt.
Mm-hmm.
It makes no sense. I mean, you've got to be smart enough to trust your own eyes and, you know, really trust your football people's collective sense of whether or not this is a player that would fit into the system, both from an actual talent point of view and just an attitude point of view, a spirit point of view. But I don't know why anybody would not call, because even if it's, you know, a lot of benign, innocuous stuff, the one guy who's honest, you might actually sway your draft board. So mm-hmm. I'm always making that call, and I'm probably prepared to go through a lot of baseless rhetoric.
Mm-hmm.
But the one time I get something good, it could change my franchise. Absolutely inbounds.
Are you in or are you out?
The Clippers last night took out the Red Hot Suns. This was a good win. They won by a 10 spot, 113-103. Paul George dropped in 33. Kawhi put up 27. Now, as we know, Leonard has a player option after this season, and some wonder if he could bolt L.A. If the Clippers stumble in the playoffs again. However, the Athletics crew, they report that it's widely expected around the league that Kawhi will remain with the Clippers, quote, barring a dramatic turn of events. So, it is Kawhi in his best interest here, Tiki, to stay with the Clippers, in or out?
I'm going to say inbounds. We had a similar question to this a few weeks ago, BT. It doesn't make sense for Kawhi to bounce to another team, because it'll be his fourth team in like 5 years. And it just feels like, you know, who where are you defined at? Like, what's your legacy going to be? Especially, you know, given that he's already won championships, but it was before we were looking at him as the superstar that he was going to become.
Yep.
Now he's at that point where he's in his prime and he's looked at as one of the top five players in the NBA. You got to be somewhere for longer than 2 years at a time before, you know, people start saying, where are you going? Like, what are you doing? It's not like he's jumping around like LeBron did and getting to the finals every year.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit different. So I'm going to say inbounds.
Wait, so you think that by jumping around, just you're talking about perceptually, it changes
yes.
how we. Okay.
Yes. Yeah, he's always going to be one of those great players. But,
okay.
Like, who is he? Like,
yeah.
Is he a Spur? Is he a Clipper? Is he a
Raptor?
Raptor? Like,
is he his next team? I don't think that really matters to him that much. So
clearly it doesn't.
Yeah, which is why it doesn't really matter a whole lot to me. Although my answer is
unless
still
you're inbounds. Going places, unless you're going places and not winning championships.
Yeah,
that's
I
the
guess.
Point.
Yeah. By the way, is Kawhi Leonard absolutely still a top five player? Are we 100% sure about this?
Question.
Top five.
It's been inconsistent, but I'm going to say yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to probably put him at five as well, but. And then we'll have to debate that at some point. There might be a little meat on that bone for a conversation.
We got to dig into the defensive side, which used to like guarantee that he was in the top five.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure if it's still there like it used to be.
Yeah, that's something we can get back to. I think that when you look at, you know, certainly the building in which he plays, if he's down to wait it out, I
mm-hmm.
mean, between LeBron, you know, where LeBron is on the odometer,
yep.
It's going to be his building for sure. It could actually be his city if the Lakers' demise comes a year or two quicker. Than maybe some anticipate. He played at San Diego State. He's obviously mm-hmm. in a part of the state that he loves. So I believe that he's happy. I believe that's why I say it's in his best interest. But with him, he's a mercurial type of personality, so nothing would surprise me. But my gut says he's going to stick around with the Clippers for a little bit.
Are you in or are you out?
All right, Teek. Yesterday afternoon, the Mets beat the Marlins on a controversial ending with the game tied and the bases juiced in the ninth. Mets hitter Michael Conforto was hit by a pitch, though he leaned in as the ball was basically coming through the zone. The umpire was getting ready to ring it up, which would have been strike three. According to rule 5.0BB2, quote, if the ball is in the strike zone when it touches the batter, it should be called the strike, clearly defined in the rule book. The play, however, much of the chagrin of Donnie Baseball, my guy Mattingly, not reviewable, and the errant call stood. Mets get a walk. And the way they celebrated, a little bit much for, I mean, for a cheap win. MLB should make any call reviewable, even balls and strikes.
I gotta say, out of bounds. I think a lot of these plays can be reviewable, especially if it's a scoring play, for example. But to make balls and strikes reviewable would unnecessarily slow down the game, and it would take away the human, like, part of this equation that's been a part of the game forever. So I'm gonna say out of bounds. I just can't get down with challenging balls
I'm with you, dude. There'd obviously be a limit on the amount of challenges, so it wouldn't drag it down maybe as much as you make it seem. It's like you get a challenge every bounce, it's a ball, that's a strike.
But
I mean,
what would be the
X
point
amount.
But what would be the point of challenging a ball or a strike? Like, well, how many are you gonna, I mean, give, if it's, well, how many if you gonna it, give you're gonna have 10 in a game or
well,
five
well, no,
in a game?
No. Well, I mean, if it's a 3-2 pitch and it's a strike and they call it a ball and there's bases loaded, you walk in a run, if you're sure it's a strike. I mean, listen, I can see why some people would say maybe, no, I'm with you, it would be too mundane, too. It would just be ridiculous here. Yeah. Now, if a ball's fair or foul, you could review that. Interference, you could review that. Is he safe or out? You could things that need to be reviewed are reviewable. So I'm with you. Balls and strikes, that would be very tedious, Tiki. I agree.
Are you in or are you out?
All right. One of the best players in baseball in the biggest city. That's Aaron Judge. Let's face it, though, he's not a healthy player. He's always banged up. Mm-hmm. He didn't play today. He's not playing now against the Rays. Didn't play the other night either. It's just he's hurt. So he's got a little, they didn't say oblique, but they're saying side, whatever. That's kind of what the oblique is. We'll see. He's missed 142 games from 2018 through 2020 for injuries. He's hurt his wrist, his oblique prior, his calf, and his ribs. Now, after just five games, all right, and he's coming off a great game. He had a home run the night that he got hurt. Skipper Aaron Boone rested Judge Wednesday. They were off yesterday. And his reasoning has some concern, including your partner.
Was sore yesterday during the game, kind of in his side, and then after the game was sore. So just with the off day tomorrow, you know, just something trying to stay ahead of and don't want to push through anything right now.
What happened to lead to that soreness?
I think it's just been just the general wear and tear of the first several days, you know, DH in one day, a lot of swings. So I think it's just, as I would say, general soreness, I guess, in the side.
All right, well, he pointed to a day off, which was yesterday, and you would hope that he would be fine today. He's not playing, as I said before. They're playing the Rays right now. We do believe that Judge's frequent injuries will prevent him from becoming the superstar we all thought he would be, in or out.
Inbounds, BT. Several swings because he played DH for a day? What?
He had a long at-bat, Tiki. Okay. Come on, I'm being facetious.
I know.
Long at-bat, grinded through a nine-pitch at-bat.
I'm going to say
he's
inbounds.
Sore.
I'm going to say inbounds.
The answer is absolutely, sadly, inbounds. Yes. And on a deeper level, Yankees got some problems here. Now, first of all, their shortstop cannot. Gleyber Torres is not a shortstop. What he did the other night, what he's done all year, what he did last year, get him back to second and get yourself a shortstop and put DJ at first base and figure it out. Corey Kluber got rocked today. He's your second pitcher. And Judge is always hurt. Yankees have issues.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.